Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Naked Englishman podcast. I'm Richard Vobes. This is the audio diary of my life, behind the scenes of a YouTube creator on the 25th of October 2024. And just moving some stuff to get onto my chair. My book came yesterday, thanks to the lovely Sean James Cameron, who purchased it for it, because he heard me mention a book in A Field's Edge, talking about Adrian Bell. And it obviously piqued his interest, and it piqued mine. And I'd actually looked for it, but I couldn't find a copy. And it's curious, this, because there was a series of discussion books, apparently. So this is called The Changing Village by F.G. Thomas, and it's a discussion book number 25 in a publishing thing published by Nelson. And these discussion books, the first 30 says, so you can talk about the maturing mind, the national self-sufficiency, drama in life, what about India, physical education, the responsible citizen, factory law, rude mechanics, our spoken language, the material of English history, human types, the geography behind history, propaganda, the French political... Anyway, goes on. Curious things at the time, and it was published in 1939. So there are 20 more, it says here, in active preparation. Discussion books, if you've not heard of those, how fascinating that is. Before we get to it, I want to just have a look at our diarists. We've been following those. Gilbert White in 1784 said, hard frost, thick ice. In my way to Newton, I was covered with snow. Snow covers the ground and trees! ! In October, in Hampshire. Interesting. On the same day, S.T. Coleridge in 1799, a few years later, in North Riding, says, aspens, one a lovely light yellow, the other red, or rather poppy-coloured. And Francis Kilvert in 1874, just under 100 years later, is saying, a damp, warm morning, steaming with heat, the outer air like a hothouse, the inner air cooler. And in consequence, the old thick panelled walls of the front rooms streaming with warm air condensed on cold walls. The afternoon was so gloomy that I was obliged for the first time to have lights in the pulpit. So there you are, it's getting dark at winter. Because they were, I imagine most of all of those probably were at Greenwich Mean Time as opposed to British Summer Time. We will be switching back, won't we, at this weekend, I think, to on the Sunday, I think, back to Greenwich Mean. I don't know whether we've gone forward or backwards. I mentioned this the other day and I still can't remember. Anyway, yesterday was a good day for a little bit of writing. I managed to get quite a bit done. Well, I say a bit, I mean a few pages. We had The Lawful Remedy in the evening. We went to the farm shop, which was very nice. Julia and I bought a very expensive piece of, was it sirloin? Can't remember now. Or rump? Steak.
It was expensive because it was a big chunk.
It was a huge chunk. What was it? Rump? Or yeah, rump steak. But it was very nice. I did cut it into three, so I've got a little bit left. But it was delicious. And we made it with some veg and various other bits and pieces, which was very nice.
I'm sure we could have gotten through the whole big chunk of
veg. We could have done. But we had a lot of veg with us, didn't we? We had peppers.
It made sense to put some aside for another meal.
Yes. So I'll have to have that tonight, I suppose, because I don't want it going off. Otherwise, it's awfully a lot of money.
It won't go off in one day.
No, I hope not. Anyway, so there we are. That's that. That's that, pardon. So that was yesterday, and it sort of went rapidly. Got through emails as well. Didn't get much of a walk in or anything, and I am determined, I am determined to, when I have this break from the interviews, which I've been doing for 2 years solid, is to then get some walks in the countryside if I've got these days, as well as writing and looking for land. That was the main reason, so that we actually move on. Anyway, this book that was sent to me, The Changing Village by Sean James Cameron, sent to me by Sean James Cameron, not written by Sean James Cameron. Because he was, otherwise he'd be writing in 1939, which would make him very old, and he's younger than me. So that would make me ancient. I would be of an ancient civilization. Anyway, it's an interesting book, and it talks about the, funny enough, The Changing Village. And it says here in the on the fly sheet, 2 and 6 originally, 2 shillings and 6 pence, net. The writer has made a special study of the changes that are taking place in village life and organisation following on the quick development of road transport, the application of newer methods of farming, and the central organisation of agricultural industry. Now, I think that's it is an interesting moment in history, because as he's just hinted there, the road transport development back in 39, you know, mostly we hadn't got to the point of motorways or even dual carriageways, I don't think. We probably just had single carriageways. Not that many people were driving. It was at the advent of war. He discusses the close communication of town and village with its losses and gains, the impact of urban ideas and intellect on the mentality of the villager, the arrangements of village social life, and the drastic effect of town architecture on rural buildings. Well, that is, yeah, that is true. Now, I did read a bit, and I put my thumb into where I got to, so I'm going to just make sure. Let me see if there's, there are some pictures, actually. I didn't even get that far. Oh, there's a chap here, sort of handsomey young fella, sitting on a wire fence with a great big pylon, and he's got sort of dungaree type trousers and boots and what have you. He's obviously working on the pylon, I imagine, because it talks about power potentials in this black and white picture. And it was a very striking pose, obviously posed for the picture. And that is something that, of course, we saw these pylons go across the country. Now we're seeing this development, and I did a report on it, with an interview rather, the other day, and this woman in, wherever she is, Lincolnshire, in a little village, is saying that they're going to have more and more of these. I think the reason that this book was important, and books like it, there was a lot of them. H.J. Massingham was writing about it. I think Morton was writing at the time, and a number of writers, even Priestley wrote a book. We read that, didn't we, on the live show. We're very concerned about what was happening, the massive change in the space of 50 years, and now, of course, in 100 years, it's just so totally destroyed the rural life. And yet, as somebody else pointed out, when you think of England and in times of stress, you sort of think of the land being the place that provides things. Well, they're trying to stop that altogether. We can't have that. I'm opening this at random to give you a brief idea of what the book is like. And this is chapter 2, Contemporary Ancestors. Gaffer, it says, is prominent these days. Responsible daily papers picture him frequently. What he means by gaffer. Gaffer is a term that I would know in the film industry, but what do they mean? Schoolchildren hear of him as a central character in broadcast lessons on village life. Oh. He is interviewed. He must have been on the radio, or the wireless, as it was back then. He is interviewed and his comments retailed at length. For many people, he is the slowly reasoning countryman of a shrewd native wit, a sort of contemporary ancestor. Gaffer, or the countryman for whom he stands as an old representative, is seldom considered as a political importance. It is too readily assumed that the quicker intelligence of the townsman is more serviceable to the state than the meditative thinking of the labourer. And that, I think, is a absolutely crucial point there. It's too readily assumed that the quicker intelligence of the townsman is more serviceable to the state than the meditative thinking of the labourer. And, you know, labourers may not be up to date with all the sciences and various things that we take for granted. But they knew the countryside, they knew the animals, they knew the weather, they knew the flowers, the plants, the trees. They knew, not because they sat down in lessons, but because they were there actively in it. They could name the grasses, they knew the herbs that were useful. And yet the townsman looked down on the labourer thinking, oh, you just, you know, move pigs from one place to another, or you just using your hands to squeeze milk from the udders of a cow. So here goes. By tradition, the countryman is described as backward. More than 100 years ago, a visitor to the southwest of England wrote that the people suffer from an overrated estimate of themselves because their early civilization gave them a sense of superiority. Indeed, in later years, the spirits of improvement have not slumbered more composedly in the highlands of Scotland than it was in this southwestern part of England. This view is still prevalent, in spite of the fact that the labourer has shown considerable aptitude in handling machinery. The farmer drives his car and occasionally milks his cow by machine with as good skill as the next. Yet, habitudes of thought, i.e. habits, I suppose, habitudes of thought change very slowly. And though the countryman has made physical adaptations to modern inventions, some of his modes of thought have changed but little. And in my mind, that's not a bad thing. Although in this day and age, it would be nice if the farmers of this world would get out of the monoculture idea of farming and get back to mixed farming. But anyway, this is not obvious to the casual visitor. Often these habitudes are seen only as subtle influences. In Devon, for example, witchcraft is no longer openly practiced. And it's that, again, is another interesting element of this, that people in the countryside, perhaps more than the town, were connected in a way to maybe superstitions, but also perhaps to a spirituality that the townsmen in their very organised, time-controlled, ruraled, I wanted to find a different word, their absence of the country and nature, their denatured, that's the cat I'm jumping about, denatured thing, are no longer connected with the spiritual nature of the countryside. And so whilst they may say witchcraft, what is conceived as witchcraft may not be quite the witchcraft that one would imagine, you know, broomsticks and black cats and cauldrons and newts and things. Anyway, that's all a fallacy anyways, you know, it is the wise woman of the village.
Witchery, yeah, the woman who knows, the Barbara O'Neills.
The Barbara O'Neill would be known as a witch, because she nowadays, because she is using herbal remedies and not going to bloody pharmaceuticals. Anyway,
doctors are the witches.
Yes, yes, these modern people with their chemicals. I mean,
they're the ones to be scared of.
Yes. So anyway, it says that witchcraft is no longer practiced. The younger generation would scoff at the idea of black magic, and a few of the older people would admit that 'tis no use telling about, 'cause there never were such things. For many, the subject is taboo and not to be discussed. Barely 50 years ago, magic and religion were interwoven in curious ways in the following incantation is an example. Fibbity, jibbity, flashty, flum, Kolagak, Tarada, Tara, Wagra Rum, Hooky, Marvosky, whatever the sum, hey presto, money come. In the name of the Father, of the Son, and the Holy Ghost, amen. Well, you know, there may be sort of an amalgamation of very nonsensey stuff going on, but that may not have been the best example, I suppose. Anyway, my father was called an atheist by several people here, writes Cyril Tor of Rayland, because he scoffed at witchcraft, a thing attested by the word of God. In a certain village, in the year 1928, I was not allowed to lecture on witchcraft and black magic because of what it says in the Bible. An old woman, died a few years ago in the village, less than 3 miles from a large town, and when she lay ill, only the village nurse would visit her. It was thought, though never spoken, that she was a witch. At the Jubilee bonfire in 1936, one village spontaneously turned the dance into a primitive orgy, which is not discussed today, and the story has already been transformed into a delightful folk tale. Even in post-war days, white witches have been prosecuted in the police courts. And all this because people just don't understand.
They don't understand that there is no white or black magic either. It's all in the person's heart. If you're an evil, wicked, thoughted person, then you're going to produce bad magic.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Simple.
These incidences are rare, but indicate the existence of ancient habits of thought which are elements in the rural mind. Before we can judge, we must understand the village people, YMCA, their traditions, their outlook, their interests, and their mode of expression. Perhaps in their way of thought, there is something that has been lost in our industrial life. Yes, so that's, I mean, it's, you know, interesting things that we forget, that people for generations, you know, for a long, long time, people were superstitious. People had spiritual thoughts. Now, are they just poppycock? Are they just rubbish? We've turned ourselves very sterile in our thoughts in recent times. And we laugh and scoff because we now follow so-called science. But isn't this so-called science leading us to hell with the idea of man-made global warming, net zero, and so on, and vaccinations that are actually maiming and harming children and adults? Are we not the science that is supposed to be clean and fresh and new and positive and gleaming? Is it not actually one of the most dangerous things that we have, that is, that more so than somebody dancing energetically round a boiling cauldron with a few herbs and spices in? I mean, it you know, one has to question who's calling the pot black. Visit the village draper. She and her family have lived on the site for more than 100 years. I.e. she was not simply born in the village, she is a native of the place. Her great-grandmother walked in her red cloak all the way to Bury Head to look after her man for the King's fleet a year before Trafalgar. And there were adventurers here, once indeed Sir Humphrey Gilbert and Walter Raleigh, who would ride together at Compton, only a few miles away. In this village they point out to you the field near which the belted highwayman robbed the mail. Here they ask for a course on the founders of empire. Many a lad from here went then. The retired sailor today hoards his silk gown from China, his ivory from India, and my wife remembers returning from a village performance how a seaman's tale kept awake a busload of sleepy village players until long after midnight, their astonished eyes heavy, their faces shining with grease paint, he with his ass head on his knee and Puck asleep on his shoulder. The folk hoard incidents, whimsies, legends, old clothes, old glass, old brass, old chests. Of these, the women institutes have organised exhibitions from farm, hall and cottage, while occasional sales at old Barton's provide loot for tourists, undoing loot for tourists' undoing in the antique shops of towns. Quaint ceremonials persist. Bell ringing and skittle contests are popular. And there is still a little individual craft work in pottery, lace and wrought iron. Beautiful, beautifully written, beautifully observed. The Changing Village by F. G. Thomas. I read it, as I say, when it came. I do have this habit of, excitement, drop everything, read a few pages from the book, get the measure of the work and blow one's hooter. Fascinating. Fascinating. And my point goes back, as I often do. We have lost so much. I mean, it's easy to say we have lost, you know, community. But what in that word are you referring to? What do you mean by community? Those instances that he said of farmers putting on plays, labourers going and drinking in the village, the drapery, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker, all these old crafts that people knew and had stories and they would have conversations, the rural. And, well, and of course, remember, we were all rural at one time. We think we're so damn clever with our sophistication, but look where our sophistication has got us. Look where these towns have got us. All in ever smaller boxes, crammed in with technology, looking at artificial worlds on screens, radiating our brains to buggery with EMFs, putting up these awful towers, restrictions. I mean, on the Lawful Remedy yesterday, some poor woman accidentally drove into a bus lane. A camera picked her up, a camera, and now she's got a 200 and something pound fine for driving on a piece of land that she inadvertently didn't realise there was a restriction on, or it was unavoidable, or whatever. And suddenly we have this world of restrictions, penalties, punishment, financial extraction, bailiffs, enforcement officers, police, heavy-handed, oppressive nature. This is not living. So, you know, I think now you look back at the rural life. Where in the rural life? Oh, I inadvertently drove on a little bit of gravel that is in front of a farm. No one is complaining. No one is moaning about it. OK, don't park in front of a farm gate. But my goodness, the town has become an aggressive, cash-grabbing state of control, surveillance, policing. It is a horrid place, denuded of nature, denuded of life and community, denuded of laughter and fun. We no longer have youth centres. People do not really go out much to the theatre. We no longer put on events. And when they are, they're very sterile or very professional and slick and just devoid of actual life. And this is where we are. Can people not see this? This is where the importance of looking back so that you realise, my God, we've lost so much, is vital. So big thanks to Sean James Cameron for sending that book, because, again, it's a reminder of what we have done and what we have done to ourselves. And we go along with it. We don't rise up. We don't say, no, I don't want this. That the small number of people can control us in this way is abhorrent to me, absolutely abhorrent. And that people are so dim, dumb, resigned, feel, what's the word I'm looking for, unable to do anything. What's the damn word? I can't think of the sunning word. The will has gone from them, and they cannot... It's annoying when I can't reach out to a word that I know sums it up absolutely. But anyway, they've become weakened, and anyway, it doesn't matter. Thank you for listening, if you did. And if you didn't, well, you missed a tirade at the end there, didn't you? Until the next one, thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.